British tried to monopolize salt, Gandhi walked to the beach and said, nature gives it for free, we will continue to make our salt. We need to tell Monsanto and the governments of the world, we've received these seeds from nature, from our ancestors, from communities across the world. We have a duty to protect them. A law that says saving seed, growing seed, and our seed freedom is a crime is a law that must be made illegal. We have to act for higher law, the law of the earth, the law of social justice, and most importantly, the law of women's knowledge and women's skills in seed saving. As long as seed was in women's hand, no crop failed, no farmer committed suicide. As soon as seed moved into Monsanto's hands, we have illegitimate laws, we have genocide, we have ecocide, we have butterflies and bees being killed, we have soil organisms being killed. This is no future for humanity or the earth.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, environmental leader, feminist, thinker from India. She's in Los Angeles now speaking on International Women's Day and will be at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden on Saturday speaking as well. Among her many books, Earth, Democracy, Justice, Sustainability, and Peace, as well as Making Peace with the Plant, with the Earth. I will be speaking tomorrow night at Lincoln Center, Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center, 10 Lincoln Center Plaza. I'll be interviewing Dave Riker after his film. The film showing is at 7:30, and we'll be doing a Q&A afterwards. Democracy Now! Produced by Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sahani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martina Sorosta, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman.
And this is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronick and I'm happy to be with you today. Today is Friday, March 8th, 2013, just in case you're listening to our podcast sometime in the future and it is not March 8th, then you know that this is when it was done. Okay. So what are we? What is the new WHFR Journal? Well, first of all, we're not the same as last week. That's why we're new. And secondly, we're from Henry Ford Community College's nonprofit, non-commercial radio station, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We do things a little bit differently around here. First of all, we don't care about those commercials. No, we do things because we want to. So we play music and we do news on this show and a couple of other talk shows that we produce each week because we think it's important. And we hope you do, too. And we want to keep you thinking and acting locally, especially, because that's where you can make the big difference. Those are the things that matter most, at least day to day anyway. But we are going to jump to the national level because of a couple of things that do impact on us here in Michigan and for that matter, the Dearborn level. So I have two stories here. The first one is from the New York Times today, the first story that actually covers it that I'm going to feature, and that is about the Senate filibuster in Washington, D.C. by Senator Rand Paul. Okay. He began a filibuster that lasted 13 hours, started last Wednesday on the Senate floor. Rand Paul is a senator from Kentucky, and he got a lot of support from different people. The Tea Party movement, Code Pink provocateurs supported it. Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, Republican minority leader, also praised his conviction. What was it all about? Well, you've probably heard in the national media that he was against the legal principle that the President of the United States should have the authority, whenever he wants to kill an American citizen in the United States with a drone strike. That means no trial, nothing, just send the bomb in. And he finally did get a response from Attorney General Eric Holder Jr. And this came yesterday. Holder did state, our Attorney General, that the president does not have the authority to use a drone to kill a U.S. citizen on American soil who is not engaged in combat. A couple qualifiers there. And I would just say, first thing, that this does matter to us all. Number one, again, all the opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. So that's all clear, right? But thank you, Henry Ford Community College, for letting us have our opinions on these things. But I would just point out, doing some critical thinking on this, that what is that U.S. citizen and American soil who is not engaged in combat? So what does combat mean? When are you engaged in combat? When you throw a rock at a police officer or a military person during a protest march? I mean, is that combat? And, you know, by the most general definition, it is. So do you deserve to have a drone strike on you right then and there? You say, well, that's inappropriate response. That's massive response that has no connection with provocation at the start. Well, so I'm just saying, folks, I would like Eric Holder to define what he means by combat. And then again, U.S. citizen on American soil, I never liked that idea that he can kill, and that's apparently established fact, he can kill an American citizen who's not on U.S. soil. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's already been established. Oh, did you miss that? That was last year. Oh, yeah. So if you go to Canada, I guess, whenever the president feels he doesn't like you, you're going to have a drone strike on you because you're in a foreign country. Doesn't matter if you're a citizen. Forget about all those protections of jurisprudence, you know, and, you know, our legal system, innocent until proven guilty. Just send the drone, boom. And, of course, my last comment is just about this whole issue in general. How in the world did the president of the United States get the right to kill anybody? Okay, U.S. citizen or anybody else without authority, first of all, from Congress, and secondly, without a trial. This is not American. We have a court system. Yeah, I know. If you're rich and you got a lot of lawyers, you can postpone the eventual outcome for quite a few years. But nonetheless, you know, if I'm innocent, but I'm charged with a crime, I would like all the protection in the world. I would like to know that the system will finally let me go after it reviews the evidence and shows that I was not guilty. Okay? Unless, of course, it was trumped up evidence, and that's always possible. Nothing's perfect in the world. So I wish Senator Rand Paul, who's a libertarian, small L, because he's a Republican, capital R, but he's definitely a libertarian and agrees, as his father did, Ron Paul, that the Libertarian Party is probably the political party that's on track the most in this country, but you can't get elected as libertarian because you don't have the organization behind you. Okay, so as long as he can get elected with the Republican organization behind him, you know, for campaign workers and campaign financing and so on, I mean, that's why his father became a Republican from Texas. In fact, he was a House of Representatives, in the House of Representatives for, I guess about 20 years, and he's retired now. So I wish Rand Paul or someone else would have filibustered on the more general principle about how in the world a president of the United States has the right to kill an American citizen or anybody else anywhere in the world without some sort of review and or trial, some sort of fair trial. You just don't kill people because you don't like them. Did that come from some Hollywood movie somewhere? One of those, you know, Death Wish movies, you know, justice, no matter what, forget about the system, Dirty Harry movies, you know, the system doesn't work, so we just go out and kill people? Or did it come from James Bond pictures, 007, License to Kill? Yeah, but he doesn't kill unless his government tells him to. And, of course, in the movie, I think it's quite clear there's plenty of evidence against these people. Or he discovers a lot of evidence against them. And yet, and I'm a James Bond movie fan. It's very entertaining most of the time. You know, he usually finally kills these people because they're trying to kill him. I mean, he's trying to stop them, it's true, but usually winds up that he gets them killed or he kills them because literally right at that moment, they're trying to kill him. So it's self-defense. So that's a little different, but maybe, you know, something has got messed up here. Now, it's interesting to me that the story from the New York Times said, well, you know, many Republicans like Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Senator John McCain of Arizona, the great war hero, as they proclaimed him in his last try for the presidency. He says, McCain said, we've done, I think, a disservice to a lot of Americans by making them think that somehow they're in danger from their government. They're not. But we are in danger from a dedicated, long-standing, easily replaceable leadership enemy that is hell-bent on our destruction. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe you wouldn't send those drones out whenever you felt like it. But, you know, what is your criteria? How careful would you be? I don't want it. And I think if you're against the so-called Patriot Act, which as Justice or one of our Supreme Court justices said about the Voting Rights Act, gee, it sure sounds like a good name. Nobody would vote against that. Well, the Patriot Act is unpatriotic because it takes away all of our basic freedoms and our chance for a day in court. Okay, innocent until proven guilty, please. And you say, well, okay, maybe just for U.S. citizens. Why not everybody? If you're not a U.S. citizen, oh, well, we can just drop a drone on your head with a bomb in it? What? Well, you know, George W. Bush got this preemptive strike concept in her head. Well, we think they're bad. We don't have the evidence. But after we go in and kill 100,000 of them, well, we didn't kill that many, but we did. You know, innocent people, where the soldiers, I think we only killed about 10 or 20,000 Iraqi soldiers, but we killed another 100,000 innocent people in this little effort. And then we still didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. So there was really no reason to go in there. Oh, yeah, Saddam Hussein was not a nice guy. We wouldn't want to live next door and so on. You want to drop a bomb on him? Either from a bunch of warplanes or from a drone? Just because you don't like him? What kind of world is that? Okay. I'm sure a lot of people don't like me. I don't know why, but I'm just saying. Go down the list. They have the right to drop a bomb on me? Because they don't like me? Well, how's the president any better? Well, the president wouldn't do it unless he had evidence. Yeah. Is anybody checking the evidence? You know, the CIA had it wrong about Iraq. And they so supposedly gave evidence to the President of the United States about weapons of mass destruction. So it wasn't a court of law. There was a lot of people in the CIA that clearly knew there was no evidence that was solid, okay, that meant anything. Okay, well, thank you, Senator Rand Paul, for at least getting this clarification. But it's not much protection, folks. The President of the United States does not have the authority to use a drone to kill a U.S. citizen on American soil is not engaged in combat. So if you're not engaged in combat, maybe they can still send a soldier over and just shoot you. Because he'd only asked about a drone. Okay? So that's my final qualification there. Why is this? What's the big deal about a drone? You got soldiers all over the place. You got CIA, FBI. They just get the order. Go and shoot somebody who lives at this address. Well, that's Holder didn't say that couldn't happen. So I don't understand, first of all, why I guess Rand Paul thought he could win this one, which he did, on this one single issue. But in fact, for the sake of liberty for all of us and for the good of the world, no, we didn't win anything yet. So keep watching the skies. However, it's interesting that in his filibuster, of course, it went on 13 hours. So he's got to talk about something. All right. But he mentioned Dearborn's Arab American community and the federal use of drones And this was reported yesterday on the pressandguide.com news site, webpage, pressandguide.com. And you'll probably see it in the Sunday's Press and Guide. So I guess Joe Slezak was actually listening to the whole 13 hours. Well, anyway, it came up here that well, of course, he mentioned the Twin Towers and need for a day in court. And here's the phrase directly from Senator Rand Paul. If you're sitting in a cafeteria in Dearborn, Michigan, if you happen to be an Arab American who has a relative in the Middle East, and you communicate with them by email, and somebody says, oh, your relative is someone we suspect of being associated with terrorism, is that enough to kill you? For goodness sakes, wouldn't we try to arrest and come to the truth by having a jury and a presentation of the facts on both sides of the issue? And Senator Paul went on, see, the real problem here, one of the things we did a long time ago, is we separated the police power from the judicial power. This is an incredibly important first step. Unquote. Paul also mentioned the issue in an interview with NBC. He said the policy could lead to a situation where, quote, an Arab American in Dearborn is walking down the street emailing with a friend in the Mideast, I guess from his cell phone, smartphone, and all of a sudden we drop a drone on them. So I guess we're one of the big examples. And at least, according to Attorney General, that's not going to happen at this point. But again, I would say, what is that on, you know, in combat thing? Are they in combat? If they seem to be plotting an attack on the U.S., is that combat? Or is combat war that can only be sanctioned by Congress? Yeah, when was the last time that really happened? So, oh, Iraqi war. Yeah, right. They did it at first thing in the morning, 6 a.m., and they had like 100 pages George W. Bush gave them, and nobody even read them. That's right. No senator or representative even read them. It was just, ooh, we've got to defend the U.S., and we don't want to look bad to our legislature. So everybody voted for it, I think, other than Senator Feingold of Wisconsin, maybe one other. Bernie Sanders, perhaps, Vermont. Other than those two, unanimous. And that was crazy. They didn't even read the bill. They didn't even know what was in there about going to war with Iraq. And, of course, it was all trumped up and built up in a media circus that got us into that. So thank you, Joe Slezak, for mentioning the Dearborn connection to the drone issue. Must be a reason for that. Okay. And we're moving on in the new WHFR Journal at about 15 past the hour to the announced resignation or deciding not to run, not resignation, sorry, Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. He's not going to run for re-election in 2014. That's next year, 2014. That would be November. And some people say, well, why is he telling us 2 years early? Well, it's going to be hard enough to find a Democrat in Michigan to run against Governor Snyder. Several great candidates, in my humble opinion, have already said, no, I'm not going to run against Snyder. Jack Lesenberry in the Metro Times this week said, I don't think Snyder's going to lose. First of all, there's no decent Democrats who want to run. Secondly, everybody's going to forget about all this bad stuff that happened and that he signed and pushed through last December, like emergency manager law, against the public's wishes. The public just voted no to that manager law, and the legislature put it back in and made it unable to be taken out by the public. So thank you very much, legislature, for doing the will of the people. Everybody that was part of that, including Governor Snyder, as I stated before, should be thrown out of office. If anybody remembers, Jack Lesenberry says, when November of 2014 comes along. Senator Levin, you know, you have been there longer as a senator from Michigan than any other person. And have risen to great prominence, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He has a few tasks that he's going to focus on. He sent a letter about what he's going to be working on in the next year and then even after that. And He wants to get us out of Afghanistan as soon as possible. And he secret use to fund political campaigns, secret money to fund political campaigns. Well, not even that secret. Citizens United, thank you, Supreme Court of the U.S., for making corporations people and allowing all big money to trump all small money. That's my ironic thank you to the senators, and he's against that. I don't know what he can do. Maybe he can work with the United Citizens, Anti-Citizens United people. Also, he wants to change tax avoidance schemes that have no economic justification or purpose other than avoid paying taxes. So that's, I would call that either a whole new tax system or cutting out a lot of loopholes. Okay. And so those are the things he said he's going to work on. So thank you for your service. It's a tough job. He's 78 years old. Tough job. And there's plenty of time for a Democrat to come forward, not only to replace Senator Levin, but also to run against President Governor Snyder. Okay, we've got a couple of HFCC stories here. One directly hot out of the Dearborn Press from last Sunday. HFCC is going to hike tuition. I thought we did this. I thought this story was on this show a month or so ago. Maybe it was just they were considering it. And now they made it official, because there's no time frame here in the story that says when this was voted on. But what it's going to be is a 7% increase in tuition. Tuition per credit hour for in-district residents, that is in the Dearborn District, will increase from $75 an hour to $82 an hour. Non-residents from $135 credit hour to $142, and out-of-state and international students from $140 to $147. And still, I think, will be the cheapest college in this area for freshman and sophomore year. Don't know about that for sure. Maybe Wayne County will be a couple pennies cheaper. Not sure. But nonetheless, that what a deal for a college education. Well, again, you're talking about a credit hour. So that a full 3-credit-hour class that goes 15 weeks, meets 3 hours a week, gives you 6 hours a week of homework, plus final exam. You know, what an intense, involving experience. So a Dearborn resident, it only costs you $246 for that 3-credit-hour class. It gives you 15 weeks of learning, okay? 3 hours a week in class, taking notes, interacting with the teacher, turning in assignments. 6 hours typically, just estimating for the average person, of reading and projects and other written assignments outside of class. So at least 9 hours a week of involving experience and progressing for 15 weeks in a row, and then a final exam that you got to study your head off to, you know, to get through. $246 for that, plus books, okay, and service fees, all right. But still, maybe under $300, well, under $350 anyway. You know, textbooks cost a fortune these days. I know most of them are costing $100 a book for each class, $100 a book. Anyway, okay, $350 for 15-week experience, 9 hours a week for 15 weeks, 16 weeks, including the final. Wow. If you don't make something, if you don't learn something in that time, I don't think it's the fault of the college or the teacher, really. Seriously, this is an awful lot of education for very little money. Okay, so to me, personally, as a teacher here, this is dirt cheap. This is bargain basement. This is value village of the education community. And yet, what are our standards? What's our transferability? What's our reputation about quality programming? I think it's the tops. Of course, again, that's just my humble opinion after being a teacher here for now going on 45-plus years, just part-time now, but still full-time for 40 of those. So I think it's a great deal. I don't see 7% as much of a raise, considering that the tuition was so low in the first place. And yet, the only new thing in the story that I see at the bottom of the first page, which is not explained, is that the college expects now to end this year $600,000 in the hole, even though we expected to break even. Now, of course, they explain about, and we did, I know Dennis and I did this story, Dennis Reimar is our WHFR news director, who is driving on I-94 right now from Western Michigan to get here. He won't make the show today, but he had to do a little side trip to Oklahoma. This is school break week, or the end of school break, mid-semester, so-called spring break, even though it's a winter semester in progress. There's no classes here this week, but of course, WHFR continues on. In any event, I know we've done the story. We talked about this, about people that are abusing the federal money, and the college has to give back the federal funds if they're not used fully by the students. So we get the money, and we expect to keep it, but then the students don't finish their classes. And this is only a small percentage. The story rightly goes on page A. This is last Sunday's Press and Guide, and points out that it's not everybody. So don't say, oh, anybody gets federal money, oh, they're all moochers. Somebody famous running for president last time talked about moochers, 47% of us. Anyway, not the case here. Just a few percent. Most people need that money, and they put it to good use to get their educations here. They can't even afford the low tuition we already have. And so some of that, that support doesn't go to everybody, just you have to qualify for the Pell Grant. There's only certain kinds of programs that do that. So I don't know if that $600,000 deficit is caused by that. They already laid off 40%. Or reduced hours, if you will, for non-instructional staff here at the college. And that was crazy. I'm sorry, my opinion, Henry Ford Community College, because those people were working for dirt cheap money, and they were essential support to the full-time and the regular part-time union people. But, of course, they had no union. So there you go. Chop them. Cut them up. Dice them up. Throw them away. You know. See why you need unions, folks? These people, and I knew many of them that helped in the labs, and they were significant to the educational success of Henry Ford Community College, and 40% of their hours, therefore 40% of that group, is gone now. And this is in counseling, the library, in labs, in our academic programs, and even at WHFR. And we miss them. It's totally wrong. That the cuts had to come this way. So I don't know where that $600,000 deficit was or is. Last year, I guess it was 1.3. But the point was about last year, and it was in the paper, is that last year's deficit was covered by a rainy day fund. That's what it's there for. In certain years, we got a fund flow problem, and we did because they tossed the building funds for our new buildings into the general fund, which is never done usually that way, but we did that, so it looked like we were in debt there. So they took from our general fund reserve, and I assume they'll take from the $600,000 reserve, $600,000 from that reserve again this year. So I don't think we're doing that bad, but oh well. That leads us to our second story, and that is just... As of yesterday, we now have six candidates. The top six candidates have been announced for HFCC president, and there'll be open forums to be held this month on the week of March 18th and March 25th. And details on times and locations will be available within the next week. So if you're interested in the community, you can come by, because obviously these people work for you in the community to direct the college. That information probably will be at the college website, hfcc.edu. Well, here, and I have strong feelings as a faculty member full-time for 40 years and still here about certain of these candidates. So I'm going to try not to say anything. I'm not going to give you any opinions, even though that's what you expect on this show. But it just wouldn't be fair, okay? So here are the six, and it's in alphabetical order. First of all, Ishmael Ahmed. Yes, the former head of access and now an associate provost at the University of Michigan Dearborn for integrated learning and community partnerships. Interesting job. I don't know what that is other than a PR person, but Ishmael is in that position. I've known him a long time and worked with him at WHFR and at access, and you folks know of him too, I'm sure. And know about what he's done. The second candidate alphabetically is Wilfredo, known as Will, Arvelo. He's currently president of Great Bay Community College in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That's a place I like to visit, right on the ocean. Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Boy, were they hit by some bad storms and big waves recently. I wonder if that's why he wants to move away from the coast. That's a joke, folks. No. Anyway, he oversaw a big construction on that campus, and he got a new accreditation passed and did all kinds of things. Okay, you can read about this probably in the Sunday Press and Guide. Reginald Gerlicka. Reg Gerlicka well. He's an instructor of the English division, formerly was division director, and he also served as vice president here at Academic Affairs. Last year he moved out of that vice presidential job and is back to teaching English right now. But he's in the running again, and he is the only candidate who is currently here at the college. So it's in the placement world is called an internal candidate because he comes from inside the organization. Stan Jensen, next on the list. He's for 5 years almost. He served as president and CEO of Colorado Mountain College. It's a growing institution, ranked first in Colorado and 17th in the nation for student success as measured by graduation rates and transfer rates. Comparable size to us. He's done a lot of good things. He's got three books. I circled that. Author of three books on the topics of leadership and team building. I'd like to read those. Maybe I'll get it right someday. Gordon F. May. Gordon May began his career. He's our fifth candidate in 1986 in higher ed, and he rose to be at Oakland Community College. He's the president, I believe, if I'm reading this correctly, currently, of their Highland Lakes campus. He was at Auburn Hills campus, and he did different directorship jobs, worked with the city of Pontiac for a while, not as emergency financial manager, but as an executive director of their, I think it's sort of a downtown Pontiac Center, OCC Pontiac Center. But now he's, I believe, president of the Highland Lakes campus. Okay. Valerie Robertson, and that's Robertson, not Robertson. Okay. She is currently vice president of academic affairs. That's called sort of like student affairs. No, academic affairs. Academic affairs, that would be the classes. That's the curriculum, yes. At Joliet Junior College. Is that Illinois? I think so. And she was president, though, for a while, of Olive Harvey College of the City Colleges of Chicago for more than 5 years. And that college has a predominantly African-American and growing Hispanic population from the southeast side of Chicago. And so certainly she's very aware of community college life in the urban metropolitan area. And what the needs and problems and challenges are. So those are the final. It's not the final because they say they're top candidates. There's more candidates, but these are the six that they've invited at this point to these public forums and open forums. And they'll be, of course, judged based on their responses and their interaction during these. And it doesn't mean that one of them will be the president, but it could be one of them. So we wish the best to all of them, in spite of my strong opinions one way or the other here. So now we're going to move on the new WHFR Journal, as we do typically every Friday, to stimulating commentary from our populist from Texas, and that is Jim Hightower. So take a listen to these two comments. I think you'll be interested and surprised, especially by the last one, by the second one. And so here comes the comments from Jim Hightower.
Here's a diabolical idea from the hottest level of hell, down where Wall Street's fiendish schemers and scammers dwell. Conspiring with state lawmakers, such powerhouse banks as J.P. Morgan Chase, U.S. Bank Corp., and Bank of America have devised a new way to enrich themselves by, get ready to gag, ripping off unemployed Americans. As Lily Tomlin has said, no matter how cynical you get, it's almost impossible to keep up. These bankers have slithered into the process that states use to pay monthly jobless benefits to hard-hit people. These payments used to be mailed to recipients or deposited directly into their bank accounts. But Wall Street lobbyists, using phrases like win-win, have enticed states to switch the payment system to bank-issued debit cards. This saves states the cost of mailing or direct depositing the money, but banks don't do anything for free. Someone must pay for distributing the benefits to individuals. Guess who? Yes, the unemployed. Now, each month, the cost of distribution plus a generous profit for the bank are automatically deducted from the meager benefits the jobless receive. Then the bank hits them with ATM fees and other charges for using the card. How handy! In the sense that it puts bankers' hands right into the pockets of unemployed people, forcing those in dire need to pay millions of dollars in unnecessary fees to some of the richest bankers in the land. This is Jim Hightower saying, California, Indiana, Kansas, Maryland, and Nevada don't even allow recipients the choice of direct deposit, forcing them into the clutches of a particular bank, which violates federal law. But the whole system of profiteering on jobless people is an obscene violation of America's fundamental sense of morality. For information and action, go to National Consumer Law Center at nclc.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Well now, here's some unexpected news. It comes from what purports to be an official document of the National Republican Party. And wow, the policy positions it contains show that the party leaders really are serious about coming to their senses and rejecting the plutocratic extremism and far-right wackiness that has stained their recent presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial campaigns. Right at the top, this 18-page manifesto proclaims that, quote, our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people. Forget last year's ridiculous pontifications by Mitt Romney and others, dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, America does not prosper, it proudly proclaims on page 3, unless all Americans prosper. Shazam, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who, with their minds, their hearts, and hands, create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports the Postal Service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the grand old party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Yes, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Like comedians say, bada boom, 1956. Republican Party platform. Well, first of all, how many platforms of any party actually ever get put into law once people get elected? Not many, not much. But still, as a campaign document, where are those Republicans these days? Did they become Democrats? Even some Democrats don't support all those things anymore. Or the other interesting thought was in 1956, what was the Democratic Party platform like? Oh my gosh, you'd have to assume that they were more left-leaning, pointing, whatever. Speaking of politics, and aren't we always, remember, politics is the science of who gets what, why, where, when, and how. Yeah, the power. Okay. Getting a little dizzy here. Ah, intoxicating, all that power, even in the words. Anyway, today is International Women's Day. So congratulations if you're a woman. Sorry if you're a man. You don't get an international day. But why? Well, because women don't have equality worldwide. It's interesting to me that International Women's Day is not a national holiday anymore. It was briefly once back at the turn of the 19th century, and was it 19-something? 1918, I believe it was. Or maybe before that. But nonetheless, it is not a national holiday for the United States. March is, in the United States, National Women's History Month. You know, it was Black History Month in February, and March is Women's History Month. Yep. As far as an international official holiday, it's only in a number of countries, most of whom I can't pronounce accurately the name of. I'll try here. It's an official holiday today in Afghanistan, which is ironic considering the treatment of women in Afghanistan, especially under the Taliban. Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Burkina Faso. Where is that? Cambodia, China. But in China, it's only a holiday for women. Duh. I don't understand, but that's what it says here. I'm at the International Women's Day website right now. Cuba, an official holiday in Cuba for women. Georgia, and we don't mean our country, we mean the country of Georgia in Eastern Europe. Guinea-Bissau, Eritrea, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan. And by the way, Senator John Kerry, now our Secretary of State, has interposed and messed up the names of those two countries. He sort of blended them together. But it's so easy to do because they sound almost alike, and it's unpronounceable to an English speaker. Laos, Madagascar, but again in Madagascar, oh, you can't celebrate International Women's Day if you're a man, just like in China. You can only celebrate the day off, maybe, if you're a woman. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, huh? Get a day off. Moldova, Mongolia, Montenegro, Nepal, again for women only, Russia, which is the big major civilized country of the world, it's International Women's Day, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uganda, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, Vietnam, and Zambia. So it may be International Women's Day, but it's an official holiday only in those particular countries, because you see, the International Day came about really from the movement in the turn of the century, last century, 1910, 1920 in there, socialist. It was a socialist movement for the people. Okay. Now in the U.S., it's true, we have Mother's Day. But not all women are mothers, so that doesn't cover everybody. What about Sweetest Day? Well, that could go both ways, you know. Men could benefit too on Sweetest Day, I assume. But anyway, that's the day-to-day. There's many events. There's many recognitions. You can check it out on the Internet. Type in International Women's Day and see what you get. And it's sort of like just Christmas. It's an awareness that maybe we lose other times of the year, and it's still something important, just like voting rights. Equality for women is still not there in this country, certainly not in terms of employment access and equal pay. That, in my humble opinion, the Women's Amendment, Women's Rights Amendment, that was trying to get enough states to approve of it back in the 70s, it failed. That's unfortunate. That would have helped straighten out. Oh, it would have caused a bunch of lawsuits for a few years, but it would have helped straighten out equity for women that's still an issue here in the U.S. So anyway, just a recognition, as you heard during Democracy Now!, which we feature every Friday only, even though it's a Monday through Friday show elsewhere. Democracy Now! Is right here on WHFR before the show from noon to 1 o'clock, so try to catch it someday. And you say, well, I can never catch it, you know, or what about those other episodes? You can get them on the Internet. Go to democracynow.org. You can play them back right from the internet, audio or audio and video, if you want to see Amy Goodman's face and her guest. There it is, right from their website. So we don't need to archive it for you. It's archived on their own website, democracynow.org. But take a listen. They did a big thing about International Women's Day today, of course, which is the holiday. Moving right along, this is the station making waves, WHFR.FM. And this is the new WHFR Journal. Coming up at 2 o'clock is Highway 61 with Joanne Kay, our blues music director here. And Highway 61, the best in blues from 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock today. So stay tuned for that. We were talking about HFCC, and let's just stay with that for a second. It was in last Sunday's Press and Guide, but next week, March 13th, our 5101 restaurant, which is run by our Culinary Arts Department, and they have another one of their very successful, very popular buffets in honor of St. Patrick's Day, but it's going to be next Wednesday, which is not St. Pat's Day, is it? 17th, right? There's a luncheon from 11 to 12:45. There's a dinner from 6 to 7:45. It's only $14 a person, and beer and wine. Yeah, all the colleges that have these kinds of programs, we have a license for that. So if you are of a certain age or beyond a certain age and you want to pay for a glass of wine or a bottle of beer or something, maybe it's on draft. I don't know. I think it's just bottles probably, but whatever. That's possible too at this affair. Reservations are suggested, I think. It doesn't say so in the article. And what is the phone number, you say? Okay, we're talking about the 5101 HFCC phone number. And looking it up right now, you know, this is only news show. We're going to hear the pages turning on the air. They say reservations are not required. Well, I've seen long, long lines at these kinds of affairs. And, of course, it's all going to be like Irish-type food, seafood chowder, corned beef and cabbage, and, oh, my goodness, great mashed potatoes with cabbage, and, oh, my goodness, braised salmon with leeks. So it's leaking all over. No, it's some sort of spice or little fish or vegetables or something, leeks anyway, and shepherd's pie, and Rosie's fire roasted vegetables too, turnips, carrots, and parsnips. So very Irish theme, of course, to the buffet next Wednesday, and a big salad bar with all kinds of stuff in the salad bar. Anyway, reservations can be made at 313-206-5101. Because that's the name of the restaurant, right? So that's, again, reservations for the 5101 restaurant in the Student Center here at Henry Ford Community College, main campus, 313-206-5101. That's a great time will be had by all, I'm sure. Education Connection. Tom Watkins has a great editorial opinion. Education should be like Ford Motor Company's slogan a few years ago, job one. Quality is job one. It's not just education. It's not just getting the degree, but the quality of the experience. And so you should read that, page 6A, Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. It's far too long to feature on the show, but very good statement there. I grabbed something from the New York Times, somewhat shorter, Thomas Friedman, who is sort of a commentator who goes around the world and touches big issues about multiculturalism and education and so on, sort of like Tom Watkins, except Friedman's in the New York Times, and Tom Watkins isn't. But he talks about these college classes being offered online for free. And I did check one out last night. I knew it existed before, but the iTunes Music Store has expanded to, well, it's an iBook store now and an audiobook store as well as classes. And it's called iTunes University. Now, there's other places you can go too, but there's all these different classes. And even the one of the most famous classes mentioned by Friedman is a new one that Harvard University, one of their star professors, offers to more than 1,000 students at a time, very big auditorium, called Justice. or if it's political science class or law, you know, law school class or whatever. Very popular class, and it's launching March 12th as the first humanities offering on the MIT Harvard EDX online learning platform. But it's already, I know, available on iTunes University for free. Now, of course, if you're going to learn anything from it, you don't just have to, you have to just not just watch these things, but also maybe get a textbook and so on. And iTunes University also indicated to me that if I had an iPad, you know, I got a Big Mac computer, but that's not good enough for iTunes University. An iTunes University iPad edition, there's interactivity. So you can see lesson plans and you can see all kinds of other things that, you know, you can point on, click on, and you can do. You can get more involved as a student would with the iPad version of iTunes University. Now, iTunes University may be available on Android devices, too. I don't know if it has the same interactivity. But I know the app for iTunes University is available, I think, on Android. Not necessarily on Kindle, because they're kind of proprietary there. But in any event, what's the future of education going to be? And what about quality? Well, certainly one thing I discovered, and Thomas Friedman mentions this too, he says there's no requirement that college professors know how to teach. Well, excuse me, Mr. Friedman, there is a requirement. It's called hiring. It's called reviewing and mentoring, we don't keep teachers who can't teach, okay? Yes, there's a few that start to get lazy after a while, but he says no more. If you're out there on television, if you're doing this online interaction stuff to thousands or tens of thousands, whether it's for free or whether you're paying for it, you can't hide. I clicked on at least a dozen different iTunes University online courses, which are all free. I mean, they're big-time honking college credit classes, but you don't take them for credit. You just take them. Maybe someday they'll figure out a way to take them for credit, or if you want to pay money. In any event, out of those 12, 10 professors are very boring. Now, maybe in person I could interact with them and they wouldn't be boring, but 10 of them, they're just sitting there, just sort of talking. And that's okay with a captive audience. A dozen or so in front of you, but because you got their attention, they can't nod off, or you're gonna point to them or hit them or something. No, I'm not gonna hit them. But very interesting. This whole online approach, and they're called MOOCs. Is that a nasty term about a certain kind of people? Nope, it's some sort of massive open online course. MOOCs, MOOC. And a big revolution happening there. We don't know where it's going to go, but quality, he thinks, is going to come along for the ride there because there'll be so many people watching. And a whole new type of quality education. But you have to be very motivated. You need a computer or you need an iPad in order to do this too, which puts a lot of people on the other side of the digital divide, unfortunately. Alrighty. By the way, State of the City address, Mayor O'Reilly, it was reported last Sunday in the Press and Guide, of course. It is on CDTV now, and it's a rotating schedule. We can't read you all the different days and times, but it's on every single day on either WOW or Comcast subscribers in the city. It's also at the cityofdearborn.org website and at our own WHFR.fm website. If you're listening last Friday, guess what? That's right. We had the audio version for the first 35 minutes, and then commentaries from yours truly for the last part of the show. And so I do recommend you don't just read the printed statement, because Mayor O'Reilly, he said because of a teleprompter failed, he had to sort of ad-lib a couple paragraphs, and I thought they were very good paragraphs. So I suggest either watching the video or listening. And again, our WHFR Journal show from last Friday, which was March the 8th. Today's the 8th. Last Friday was March the 1st. Is right there, WHFR.fm. Click on Talk Shows. Click on WHFR Journal. Click on March 1st. And you can either download the file or listen to it directly from the site. But I do think you should listen to it and hear what he has to say about the state of the city. and or listen to me and see what I said about his comments. Okay, moving on. Let's see, we have only about 6 or 7 minutes before time runs out here. That Times Herald points out that the Oakwood Hospital smoking ordinance that was proposed is dead. That was forbidding smoking on the sidewalks or even maybe on the next street over, which I think is Venice, just west of Oakwood, where people were walking over to smoke their cigarettes from the hospital, then they would throw down the butts right on people's grass. And some people didn't like to see these people they didn't even know walking in front of their house and just standing there smoking their cigarettes, too. But they can't find a way to do that, I guess. The city council is still discussing it and until they get too disgusted, I guess, with it. And so there is a proposal, crazy to me, is that in one of the back areas at Oakwood Hospital on their own property, they're going to get another nonprofit organization to come in and build a facility, I assume well-ventilated, where people can go and smoke. I don't know, for a fee? I don't understand. That's what the paper said, so you read it for yourself. I don't think a hospital should do anything to encourage or make available unhealthy behavior. I know it's your right to kill yourself if you want to. No, technically it isn't. You know, suicide is against the law. I'm sorry. So, who knows? It's a difficult situation for the hospital and for the visitors to the hospital and those people who are addicted to nicotine. And so what are you going to do? You know, it's very difficult. Interesting point from the Times Herald they use as their editorial opinion this last week, although it's from USA Today. U.S. border security, not all about walls. Apparently some 45% of the illegal immigrants in the country now, and how many is that? 10 million, 20 million, whatever, got here just by legally coming across the border, but then not going back. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that for some reason. Interesting awareness is that almost half of the illegal immigrants staying in this country just walk across the border, you know, as if they're going to come for a day and or just visit somebody and come back. After a couple days, maybe. And so, of course. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to put one of those prison cuffs on their ankles? A beeper, a tracker for everybody? And when they come back across the border, then you can take it off? What are you going to do? I mean, that's an interesting problem. Half are just walking across legally. Boy, Rush Limbaugh is really upset about that, I bet. But it's interesting awareness, interesting problem. But then if it happens for them, when I go to Toronto, do I have to get a leg collar? Not that anybody's proposed this yet, but are they going to trust that I'm going to come back? You know, maybe I want to go up north and live with their native tribes in the middle of winter. That sounds like fun. Maybe not. Okay, moving along. A couple minutes to go here. There's a good background piece, even though it's on page 1A, the Dearborn Press and Guide this last Wednesday, March 6, about the Dearborn Fire Marshal's office. You say, fire marshal, that's the fire department. No, it isn't. The fire marshal, that office are the people that go and investigate the crimes of setting fires. That's right. Firebugs. What else do they call them? What is that crime? Anyway, setting fires illegally, burning things down, it's definitely against the law. Not a nice idea. And so there's a nice tribute to Laura Ridenour and the other members of her fire marshal's office here in Dearborn about the nature of their job. It's also a Captain Scott Rhodes and a Lieutenant Mike Kleitch. And all of them try to stop the arson. There it is, arson, illegal setting of fires. Arson ring defrauded insurance companies out of a lot of money. And of course, there's property damage and potential harm to others. And so you got to stop that. So it's great. We also have two Henry Ford Community College paramedic students working with the fire marshal's office this semester on producing educational materials for them. And, well, see, we're helping, too. So very important part of our fire department, and keep up the good work. I'm sort of amazed there's only three people in that, but keep up the good work, Laura. Okay. Morris Goodman says, don't forget about the Dearborn Home and Garden Show tomorrow from 10 to 4 Saturday in his own column. Imagine. A lot of vendors and people talking about projects, how to improve your property and your home, your lifestyle maybe, and he recommends them, so that's good, right? Tonight, the DSO, that's right, the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra is going to have a prominent cellist featured. Julie Albers will perform Schumann's cello concerto, and that will just be one piece. It will be happening tonight, Dearborn Symphony at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, 8 p.m. Free concert preview at 7 p.m., and maybe you want to get there early so that you can enjoy that. Also, there's an overture to Mignon, and the concert culminates with Hector Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, a musical tale of hopeless love when a young man's obsessed love turns from a pastoral dream to a nightmare of jealousy. Now, that's not an opera, folks, so you just got to imagine all that happening, I guess. Symphonie Fantastique by Berlioz, which is a great classical piece. And, of course, Julie Albers performing cello, a great soloist coming in tonight with the Dearborn Symphony. Okay, that's just about the time we have today, and Joanne is here, and getting all the blues organized. Oh, my goodness. We're going to have a great blues show today. Let's see what else I might have missed on my list here. Well, take a look at Jack Lessenberry, Metro Times, his comment this week about Detroit and its emergency manager law, which he's in support of. He thinks time has come, and there's some naysayers, he says, on the left. Left of what? Who feel it's conspiracy, maybe like Tom Barrow, who was formerly on the city council, I think is running for mayor, one of the mayoral candidates next time around. May not have much power, Tom, if you get elected. Maybe he's not running, I don't know, but he thinks it's conspiracy and that all the state is just moving in just to be dictatorial about things. Okay. Boy, we got a new fire extinguisher here, Joanne. It's very exciting. A man just came in from maintenance department. That's so great. Better go out and see him soon. So it's time for the new Highway 61 show for March the 8th. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. And we'll see you next week. Take care out there. WHFR, Dearborn. The longest highway.